Hello, everyone. Dan Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. Though the pandemic has posed daunting challenges for many businesses, it has also opened up opportunities for some. These firms have had the ability to pivot and have benefited from changing consumer demands. Every crisis offers opportunity, even one brought on by a pandemic that has slowed economies around the world and brought U.S. unemployment to levels not seen since the Great Depression. Although businesses large and small continue to struggle, new evidence suggests that the recession, which began in February, may already be over. Unemployment fell from 14.7% in April to 13.3% in May. While there's still a devastatingly high level of joblessness, the addition of 2.5 million jobs was a surprise to many analysts who had expected further losses in May. And it offers new hope that the winners during the pandemic are simply leading the way toward a general recovery that is happening sooner than expected. This year has seen obvious winners: online communications tools, grocery stores, and cleaning product manufacturers. The pandemic has also created boomlets for not so obvious companies and industries. "We've sold thousands of bikes," says Zach Pashak, who is founder of Detroit Bikes, a made in America bicycle manufacturer. "Sales are up sevenfold over the same period a year ago, and some models being ordered now won't be available until August." During the pandemic, Americans have taken to biking in a big way. Families in lockdown have bought bicycles to roam around the neighborhood or install as in stationary bikes. According to the NPD Group, a market research company based in Port Washington, New York, the cycling market grew 31% in the first quarter of this year, with half of that coming in March as schools closed and lockdowns took effect. "People are going back to touchstones that are comforting," said Mr. Pashak. "There's something that feels almost nurturing about being on a bicycle." With Major League Sports shut down, Americans have sought out other recreation. Online gaming companies like Activision, Blizzard, and Electronic Arts have seen sales surge. And traditional board games have also seen rising sales, even that most ancient of games, chess. It's almost like November before the Christmas holidays, said Quentin Turner, who is president of chessusa.com in North Massapequa, New York, which bills itself as America's largest chess store. Mr. Turner's suggestion that the biggest concern is that he won't have enough inventory for the real Christmas season. "If everyone places their orders in June and we've lost 2 months of manufacturing, are the manufacturers going to be able to meet our demand later on?" he thinks. online chess has exploded even more. Online tournaments, until now considered less serious than face-to-face matchups, are suddenly drawing big audiences. The second most important event in the chess world, which decides who will face the world champion in the championship match, started in Russia in March. Before the pandemic shut it down, it drew some 1 million viewers on TV and online. But during the pandemic, world champion Magnus Carlsen helped organize an online tournament with a $250,000 purse, which is unheard of for an online chess event, and he convinced top players to play from their homes. That tournament, which wrapped up last month in May, got 10 times more viewers than the Russia match. And now we're back with the innovation of the week. But before I begin that, I wanted to tell you, if you wanted to read more about bicycles, to look at the Christian Science Monitor Weekly of June 22nd this summer. And now we're involved with the innovation of the week. The first cross-country electric vehicle charging route is now complete. Electrify America has finished its network of EV chargers every 70 miles on a 2,700-mile journey from Washington, D.C. to Los Angeles along the Interstates 15 and 70. The best part is that the route includes super fast chargers at public stations, recharging cars at speeds up to 300 kilowatts. At any rate, it takes roughly 20 minutes for a full recharge, with the average electric vehicle, which boasts a range of about 200 miles. Tesla already has a supercharger network connecting most of the country, but Electrify America's initiative is a breakthrough for owners of other EVs. A second route will soon connect Jacksonville, Florida, and San Diego, California, by September. And now we go to Europe, where we talk about the city of trash, the city of lights. Paris has become a city of trash. This, according to an article in The Week magazine of July 10th to July 17th. The author is Agnes Poirier, writing in The Times, United Kingdom. And she says, as a Parisian and a leftist, I should be thrilled by the re-election this week of Paris socialist mayor. Instead, I'm depressed. During the 6 years that Anne Hidalgo has presided over the French capital, Parisian life and landscape have changed so much for the worse. But those who haven't visited the city in a while should brace themselves for a shock. It started with the rats. Growing up in Paris in the 1980s, I never saw a rodent, probably because the city kept streets pristine with an expensive daily refuse collection system. Under Hidalgo, that system collapsed. And now, so many rats feed on the filth that one must be careful not to step on their tails as they scurry along. Just as bad as the dirt is the hideous clutter. Parisian streets are today crammed with trash cans, bistrotières, water fountains, bus stops, electric dock stations, bike stations, lamp posts, signposts, traffic barriers, bollards, public lavatories, and newsstands. Surely, maybe we need some of these things, but couldn't they have been designed with style and beauty in mind? Paris used to be walkable, but now the grand boulevards are assault courses filled with official junk. Good luck, Mary Hidalgo. Agnes Poirier says, I'm thinking about packing my bags for London. And then another article from the same issue of The Week magazine, July 10th to 17th. Fewer choices and consumers just don't care. Do we really need 40 varieties of toilet paper? Ask Annie Gasparo. For years, companies added choices, filling supermarket shelves with more goods that could cater to the whims of more people. The average U.S. food retailer now stocks about 33,000 different items, nearly four times as many as it did in 1975. That includes 400 different types of Campbell's soup, quadruple the number it offered in 1984. But it's not just food. Automakers last year offered more than 605,000 vehicle configurations, even before taking different colors into account. We've become addicted to endless varieties, but the pandemic might have been a wake-up call. Panic buying and supply disruptions emptied store shelves and forced businesses to trim back options and to simplify operations. The response from buyers who were happy with a small lineup of familiar brands has now forced some executives to consider the unthinkable, whether American consumers actually need such a vast amount of choices as we go forward. So far, customers don't seem to be missing the wedge salad and the French onion soup at Outback Steakhouse. McDonald's partially credited its leaner menu, that is, with fewer salads and bagels, with reducing wait time by 25 seconds. The lesson that many companies are drawing from not being able to please everyone in the pandemic is that maybe they didn't need to try so hard in the first place. And from that, we go to Washington, D.C. Why should D.C. not be a state? Again, the same article, in the same issue of The Week magazine, July 10th, the 17th, there is a provocative short article by Paul Waldman, WashingtonPost.com. And Paul says, more than 700,000 American citizens live in Washington, D.C. That's greater than the population of Wyoming or Vermont. Yet the district has no voting representation in Congress, no House members, and no senators. No one who believes in democracy can justify this injustice, which requires Washington's residents, 46% of whom are Black, to pay taxes to the federal government without representation. Last week, the House voted to make D.C. the 51st state. But we didn't hear about that because the bill will fall into the black hole of Mitch McConnell's Senate. Republicans oppose statehood because the district is heavily Democratic. But if Democrats retake the Senate and Joe Biden wins the presidency, D.C. statehood becomes a real possibility. To get the necessary legislation through the Senate by a simple majority, Democrats would have to eliminate the filibuster. If anyone charges that Democrats want statehood in order to gain two Senate seats, Democrats should reply, so what? It would be merciless hardball politics, like the kind that's being practiced now in the Senate. Face it, if D.C. voted reliably Republican, it would have been a state by now. And now we go to East Asia and the South China Sea. Taiwan and many Asian states are feeling the heat from China's burgeoning military, fueled by a defense budget larger than those of Japan, India, and the Association of Southeast Asian Nations combined. Chinese fishing boats, Coast Guard vessels, and maritime militia are pushing ever deeper into the resource-rich and the strategic waters of the South China Sea. They regularly encroach on the legal economic zones of the Philippines, Malaysia, Brunei, Taiwan, and Vietnam. Beijing's claim to virtually the entire sea was dismissed, however, by an independent international tribunal back in 2016. But this past January, a telling standoff near the Natuna Islands, which belong to Indonesia, highlighted how China's seaward expansion is galvanizing a nationalist backlash. A Chinese fishing fleet, 1,000 miles from home, escorted by Coast Guard vessels, sailed into Indonesia's exclusive economic zone and fished for days without permission, ignoring a formal protest by Jakarta. The provocative move underscored China's ability to conduct larger and longer missions by resupplying vessels at bases it has already constructed on artificial islands in the South China Sea, in violation of Mr. Xi's 2015 pledge that China would not militarize the area. But Indonesia's president pushed back. He sent jets and warships to the Natunas. He deployed troops and then landed there himself, saying Indonesia's sovereign rights must be enforced. Soon afterwards, the Chinese flotilla departed. China's ultimate aim in the South China Sea is to have a veto over any activity. So Indonesia's rebuff was very significant. As Indonesia, Vietnam, and other countries resist China's encroachment, the U.S. is stepping up its support as part of its Indo-Pacific strategy. The U.S. Navy, still the most powerful in the region, staged a record number of freedom of navigation patrols in 2019, which were aimed at keeping vital sea lanes open and defying Chinese Navy warnings to stay out of the waters that it claims. And the U.S. assured the Philippines last year that any armed attacks on its forces in the South China Sea would trigger their mutual defense treaty, a U.S. maritime security initiative is also underway to boost law enforcement and intelligence capabilities in Southeast Asian countries and in Taiwan. It's not just about keeping waters safe for the navies to sail through. The resources are incredibly important here too, and we have to incur more risk in moving through the area. China continues to flout international law by laying claim to territories that do not belong to it. If the U.S. does not stand up for the rights of smaller countries, then those countries will probably over time increasingly accommodate China. But if the U.S., Japan, Australia, and other powers actively oppose China's infractions, smaller nations can strike a better balance. We're going to finish today with a few items from the bottom line, and this from the Week magazine, July 10th. Digital advertising on platforms such as Google, Facebook, and Alibaba is expected to account for more than half of the $530 billion global advertising industry in 2020, for the first time exceeding spending on traditional media such as television and newspapers. While pure digital ads are projected to dip by 2.4% this year, other media expenditures will fall by over 20%. And then the Federal Reserve has identified 794 companies, including Apple, Verizon, Berkshire Hathaway, and Walmart, whose bonds it will be buying as a part of a $500 billion effort to support the market for corporate debt. And following the U.S. annual stress test for the biggest banks, Goldman Sachs is required now to set aside $4 billion of additional capital to guard against an economic crisis. All of the banks will be prohibited from buying their own shares. And then Netflix announced that it would put $100 million or 2% of its $5 billion in cash holdings into Black-owned community banks, including $25 million, for a new Black economic development initiative. And there we have it for today. We're going to go on down the road looking for some more items. For a little of this, a little of that. You take care out there. Drive carefully. Wear your masks when you are out in public. And remember that social distancing. Thanks for listening. Until next time.